Let's bring Rita Louise on, a well-known psychic, a well-known, well, Rita, how would you like to be introduced? I mean, radio personality for sure. You write
really cool chick.
Okay. That's good. Very cool chick. I like that. And that's
actually, we've been playing around with words like ectomythologist or ectotheologian, ectotheologian, you know, kind of like looking at everything that has that surrounds myth and the search of God. So those are words that we've been playing around with using.
Now, if you use exotheologist, that means you can probably get a tax deduction.
I can become a religion.
Yeah, right. You can become Reverend Rita.
Oh, that I'm already that.
Okay, I figured you probably were.
No, but I could have like a cult following and stuff, you know, and people sending me donations. Ooh, that'd be good.
Well, what's your take on all of these people all of a sudden realizing maybe the end of the world may come here? I just got a call today from a lawyer down in Florida whose wife is a very religious Catholic, and all of a sudden she started talking not about the church and not even going to church anymore. She's talking about the end of the world coming and this Planet X is going to shake everything up. We may not survive. If we do, it'll be a better world when it happens. What's your take on all of that?
We kind of need it.
Well, of course.
As sad as it sounds, but
long as you
know, there's just so much going on politically and economically that, you know, I think being here on Earth, we should be here and be happy. But I don't think anybody's happy right now. I think everybody's totally stressed out, and so I'm kind of a fatalist these days.
Well, you know, we were talking about you being an author. You got a new book out.
I do.
It's not new, not completely new, but it's been out for, what, 3 or 4 months?
Since the end of October.
Okay.
So about 6 months, going on 6 months. Man-Made, The Chronicles of Our Extraterrestrial Gods. You can buy a copy on soulhealer.com or amazon.com. See, Jerry, you taught me so well.
Yeah, you got that plug right in there.
I did it just for you.
You got some interesting reviews on Amazon. In fact, it's an interesting book. Tell our audience a little bit about what it's about.
Well, one of the things that we did is we noticed looking at mythology that if you start comparing stories from one culture to another, they read and sound a lot like each other. And we started just accidentally playing around with the flood story, you know, like the Noah's flood story. And what we uncovered was not that there were separate flood incidences that happened around the world, but they were all repeating the same story. I mean, granted, there were cultural differences and, you know, who warns Noah of the flood might be a different person, you know, whatever. But the storyline was the same. And the only way we could figure out that they were telling the same story is if it all came from one source. And so with that in hand, we realized that when you talk about the story of the gods of old, the flood is really late in the narrative. And so we decided to go to in the beginning and work our way forward. And, you know, when I say in the beginning, and even though that's a biblical line, one of the things that we did was we took the Bible and we put it to the side and said, well, what do these stories tell? You know, we didn't want to write a book that validated the Bible. We wanted mythology to tell us its story. And then if it matched the Bible, it matched the Bible. If it didn't match the Bible, it didn't match the Bible. And what we found was that they indeed parallel each other, even though the Bible has a lot of editing that's been done to it. But the storyline and narrative is relatively the same. And so what we did was present the reader with the myths so that they could make a determination themselves as to what our history or prehistory has been.
And the book, it took a little while to research, I'm sure.
Yeah, it took about 3 years to research and write.
And did you, at the end of the 3 years, did you have the same feeling about what you were going to find out before you started doing the research? In other words, what I'm asking is, did it turn out the way you thought it would, or did you have some surprises along the way?
There are a lot of surprises along the way, Jerry. One of the things that we went into the book thinking, you know, it was a possibility, was that there could have been a earlier race on Earth that, you know, humanity, mankind as we know it, is the descendant of. Which, that's a theory that's out there. You know, there was the whole extraterrestrial ancient alien theory that was out there. And what we uncovered made it so that there was no way we could write this book without bringing in an extraterrestrial presence into the narrative, or else you have to make up all these excuses and rationalizations as to why things happened. And, you know, they say, you know, keep it simple. And the only way to keep it simple was to include an extraterrestrial presence in the creation of the Earth. And Jerry, this is something that I don't know if you've had many people share on your show. I mean, because I know you talk to all the UFO people and, you know, extraterrestrial people. We believe that actually a group of extraterrestrials came and terraformed the planet, that their presence here actually started, on the Earth, because we put them somewhere else first, but on the Earth about 3.8 billion years ago, with their presence here throughout time. You know, maybe not like physically on the Earth the whole time, but their presence and here. We put them on Mars first, just FYI.
Well, a lot of people say we are Martians. What do you think about that? I guess we came from someplace.
Well, I don't think that there was a fully developed culture on Mars. The way that the myths read, I mean, because we just took the myths and said, this, you know, this is what the myths say. But when you read them, this was the conclusion that we drew out of it, was that a group of extraterrestrials came and started terraforming Mars. And, you know, based on the, I want to say planetary record, you know, but basically about Mars was formed about 4.5 billion years ago. And within 2 million years, it had created the situation that life could have evolved on the Earth, or at least that's what scientists say, that if life could have evolved on Mars, it was in that very early period, which they can't figure out how it went from being like just this rough ball of rock into something that could have been habitable. But then Mars went through the late heavy bombardment period at about 4.2 billion years ago. And like, lo and behold, right after that, life appeared on the Earth. Like, boom, boom, right after. And
well, maybe they just said, we better get the heck out of here.
That was the conclusion that we came to, you know. Could a group have stayed on Mars? It's very possible, you know, and went underground or did whatever they did. But that's kind of how the story reads, Jerry, is that this rebel group usurped control and took the information, the knowledge of creation, and took off, or were kicked off, one or the other, a little hard to tell, and started a new world. You know, they talk about the Golden Age in mythology, but the Golden Age is always associated with this usurping group, or this group of rebels, depending on who's telling the story. And we believe that they're the ones that came and actually started life on this planet and started to terraform the Earth 3.8 billion years ago.
Okay, now the name of that book again is what?
Man-Made, The Chronicles of Our Extraterrestrial Gods.
Well, we wanted people to pick that up and read it and get, I want to say, an alternative view, but it's not necessarily alternative anymore. A lot of people are coming around to your way of thinking and the way you wrote this book.
I mean, they're coming around, but even people in the, like, ancient astronaut group look at me sideways because we put our dates so far back. And but I think that we have, you know, everything.
How come you put it so far back? I mean, you know, You said a long time ago, not just a few centuries.
Well, there were clues. You know, we in the narrative, in the mythological narrative, there were storylines that you would find around the world. And so one of the narratives that we found was this concept of the gods putting the sun, the moon, and the stars in the sky. And so in the Bible, for example, that's on day three. No, day four. But what's interesting is on day three in the Bible, that's where God creates the plants that live on the earth. And I joke around, it's like, well, how could that happen? No sun, no photosynthesis, no plants. And so we thought there maybe was a mistake in the Bible. But when you look at these other narratives, they all say the same thing, that there was this terraforming that happened. Just prior to that event, you know, to that storyline, there's always a war that happens. It's the sky gods against the fertility gods, you know, bringing it into a little more contemporary UFO terminology. We believe that it was a group like the Nordics that were fighting against the reptilians. I mean, that would be using the current, more current vernacular for these groups. And the sky gods won, and the half man, half snake, half fish group lost the war. But right after this war, that's when they start talking about, and they use the body of Pangu, and his bones became the mountains, and his teeth became, or his hair became the trees, and his blood became the rivers. And there is this constant storyline of the planet being formed with the body of a slain god after this war. And so they have this slain god, the body creates the planet, and then the sun, the moon, and the stars are put into place. It's a very consistent storyline that you find around the globe. And the only the place where we found this act of terraforming happening, aka the trees moving onto the earth and mountain building, was taking it back to the Saurian epoch, you know, so taking it back to about 300 a really long time ago, not the whole, you know, not the whole billions of years, but, you know, like 250 million years ago.
Yeah, you know, you talk about a million here, a million here, and then you got a billion, and then all of a sudden you'll be to a trillion. You know, I understand it's hard to keep track.
Like deficit. Come on, Jerry.
I'm impressed, Rita, with you. I mean, after all, you are a PhD. You do have some brains. But you've really gotten yourself involved in this intellectually. Get the name of that book again. The people in the chat room are asking each other about it.
Man-Made, The Chronicles of Our Extraterrestrial Gods.
Okay, maybe we'll sell a few books. You can send me a commission.
Okay.
So, yeah. We've had a lot of fun over the years going different places and doing different things. You still make a lot of personal appearances?
I'm still doing a lot of that. This last 6 months with the release of the book, I've been on the radio a lot. And, you know, I'm still doing what I do, Jerry. And I just miss you to death that, you know, I haven't seen you at some of these events, but I'm really glad that you're feeling better. And I get to talk to you on the air, Mr. Jerry Pippin at jerrypippin.com.
But, that's right. We've had a lot of fun in some of our personal presentations have always sneaking the plug in. And
I have to tell you,
you've helped me.
Coming up here, wait, let me just say this real fast, totally off the, there's a show coming up here in Dallas that I'll be at. It is the Granbury Paranormal Expo. And guess who's going to be the MC for the show? You'll never guess. Dennis Balthizer.
I was going to guess it. Honest, I was. You know why? Because he told me the other day he's going to be in Granbury, Texas.
Oh, really?
He didn't say he was going to be the MC, but tell me about that conference. When does that happen?
It is May 8th, May 18th in Granbury, Texas. So
where are they going to have it there?
I don't know. in Granbury. It's not big. I think it's at their civic center or convention center. It's Granbury's not very big, so it's either the civic center or the convention center.
Here comes a plug for you. Is it going to be on your website?
It will be, but see, I just got booked into it this past weekend, so it hasn't gotten there yet.
So
it will be.
It'll be there, and you tell people your website now. You missed the plug. You had a chance.
Soulhealer.com, sorry. But if they go to soulhealer.com, they can find out about the show I'll be at in 2 weeks, which will be the History, Haunts, and Legend Conference in my favorite spooky Jefferson, Texas, where you and I got to hang out and do some interviews and stuff.
You know, we still have that series on our website. And we haven't promoted it in years, but it still gets lots of visitors. It gets a couple, 300 people a week listening to it.
Wow.
So, Weedville is the most haunted town in Texas. And whether it is or not, I don't know, it sounded like a good handle. It is haunted. You can testify to that.
It actually has been listed as one of the top 10 in the country.
Now we're in Granville, wait a minute, I'm lost now. We're
in Jefferson.
Yeah,
Jefferson.
Okay. Yeah, you lost me there, friend. You traveled too fast.
Sorry.
In Jefferson, where are you going to be doing this?
That is going to be at the convention center in Jefferson, which is on April 6th. And it is on soulhealer.com if you want more information.
Is that haunted hotel still open?
Jefferson Hotel, yes, it is.
Yeah. We had a lot of fun there. There were a lot of interesting stories coming out of there. Pretty scary, some of them. And you actually went in there in a trance, for lack of a better term. Why don't you explain to your audience how you do that? You kind of pick up vibes from people on the other side, is that right?
Right. I mean, I'm not a medium, so I don't like talk to the ghosts. But I am very visual, so I can see them, and I'm very empathic, and so I can kind of tap into their emotional energy and tell you what they're like and, not what they're thinking, but what they're feeling and what they're experiencing. And so it's really kind of fun. I always joke around that I'm scared of ghosts, but I'm really not scared of ghosts. I'm just scared of the dark. And so the ghosts really aren't that bad. I haven't met a ghost that I really actually hated. Or was scared of. I think some of the people that do the investigations are maybe a little scarier than the ghosts. That's a joke. No mean cards.
Oh, yeah. Little humor, a little troop and some humor.
But Jefferson is really a cool place to visit. I mean, if you're into ghost hunting, there's like ghosts everywhere.
Yeah, why do you think that is? I guess it was a Civil War place that had some terrible things happen. Why did they all center around Jefferson? I mean, it's, East Texas is okay, but...
Well, I mean, from what I understand, it was a very bustling city at one point in time, and it was a trade city, and it was a port city because they would take the cotton that was grown in all these different areas and then take it down to Jefferson, and then they would export the cotton from Texas down the river, I don't even know what river that is, and it would end up on the Mississippi and get shipped off. And so, after a certain amount of time, that whole industry, not the cotton, but the railroad took over the job that they were using the river for. And so that town went from, it could have become a ghost town, but it hasn't. And so there's still people that live there, but it still has this old world charm. And a lot of the hotels, I mean, I'm kind of giving away some secrets here, were brothels. And so that energy is very evident. I mean, it really had the feel of, kind of the Wild West there.
I remember those couple of days that we were there, and we taped day and night. And remember late at night before we went into the hotel, we sat outside on a bench here. It's a brick street, and it's like it was like you're back in the 1880s.
Mm-hmm.
And you already were beginning to feel the vibrations
mm-hmm.
of what was going on there. And we urge people to consider going down to Jefferson. And once again, the plug is April 6th. Is that right?
April 6th. That's correct. All day. And there's investigations all night and a ghost walk. It's really a fun event and a full day event. Hey, but you know what? Also, Jerry, last week I just released my Dark Angels book, An Insider's Guide to Ghost Spirits and Attached Entities, in the Kindle format. And I talk all about Jefferson in that book also.
I like the title, Dark Angels. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, when I think of an angel, I think of a being without a body. But when you think of a ghost, it's a being without a body. And if you think of like a demon, it's a being without a body. And so I just kind of figured, well, if they're all beings without bodies, then if he's talking about a ghost, it would be a darker angel than an angel. And then if you're talking about a demon, it would be a really dark angel. And so, you know, the book looks at starts with ghosts and talks about the bad kids on the block. You know, we don't talk about those goody two-shoe angels and spirit guides. We just talk about the bad kids in the book.
Well, good.
But right, it's a fun book.
Yeah, let's go first. Right down my alley.
That's right.
When we talk about all these things, so one time you told me you didn't like to hang out at graveyards because you didn't think spirits would hang around there. They'd be someplace where things were alive and going good. Do you still stand by that statement, or did I misquote you?
I mean, I pretty much stand by that statement. I mean, one of the things that I personally find at graveyards is that there is so much emotional energy there that it's almost impossible to read anything. You know, and it's not necessarily the energy of the dead people. It's the energy of the people that were alive that were mourning over the graves. I mean, you don't have to be dead to leave your energy around. And so you go to those places and you just can't help be struck by sadness and grief and pain and heartbreak. And, you know, ghosts are going to stay places where they're comfortable, where they wanted to be in life. And so why would they hang around a cemetery? I mean, that just doesn't make sense. You know, they're going to hang around in their favorite house, you know, in their favorite room, be around the people that they love or want to torment, one or the other. But it doesn't, I mean, from a conceptual point of view, it doesn't make any sense. And people go, yeah, but it's a ghost. It's like, yeah, but ghosts are people too. They just don't have bodies.
Have we decided in our own mind, your own mind, why some people are ghosts and others aren't? Or is everybody a ghost?
Well, I have experienced people who have died and crossed over, you know, like they've gone into the light and, you know, had their life review and, you know, and they'll come back and visit people. It is very normal. It's a very normal characteristic to have these people come back, you know, for a wedding or the birth of a baby or whatever. I mean, especially, you know, within like 30 days of the person passing, they usually will make the rounds and say goodbye to everyone. But to have them come back for special occasions, it's just not an unusual thing. But it doesn't necessarily mean that they're bad. I mean, there are sometimes these individuals, you know, will almost act like kind of a guardian angel and watch over certain people for their whole lives. So, you know, because it's a ghost doesn't mean that they're bad or they're stuck on Earth.
Oh, where do they go? Have you decided? I mean, when they're not hanging around.
Not really. Tahiti, I hope. Somewhere good.
Okay. folks, as you can see, this is a freewheeling conversation. And we haven't talked about UFOs, but we'll in a moment. And then we're going to talk about a trip down to Peru. Are you going down there?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
In June?
We'll talk about the tour and how people can go and all that. Next hour, we're going to bring a guy named Brian, how do you pronounce
Forrester.
His last name?
Forrester.
Okay. We'll find out a little bit about what's happened down in South America. That is a very mysterious place, Peru and everything down there. And I didn't realize you were even interested in that part of the story, but I should have known better. You're interested in it all, right?
Anything that's, you know, kind of an alternative thought area. You know, and we'll talk about this more, but one of the things that Brian and I are going to be doing is really doing some remote viewing work and trying to connect with the spirits to identify dates, identify who built the structures, you know, so we're not looking to, you know, yeah, we're going to go and touch and feel and look, but we're hoping to tap into some of the psychic energy of the locations to explore it in that way. So it's going to be really a very different approach to this tour than many of the other ones do.
And stay tuned, folks. We'll tell you how you can still go. I mean, you can still make reservations, right?
Yeah.
Okay, don't go away, folks. We'll tell you all about that later in the show. But remote viewing, somehow I just knew you'd probably be interested in that too. Do you remote view?
Well, I mean, I believe, I'll say it this way, I believe that remote viewing is a psychic thing, regardless of what remote viewers want to say, because the things that they do are just a very proceduralized method of tapping into psychic information.
Well, I don't think you'll find a big disagreement with all of them. Some of them like to pursue it as a science completely, but there's a psychic ability is very important in that. But mm-hmm. I guess we all are psychics, I guess, if we wanted to use that energy, or do you think it's a special gift? You're a psychic. I don't know if I am or not.
I think everybody has psychic abilities, you know, other than, like, do you remember Vicky from my group? She didn't have any psychic abilities. She's the only person I've met on the planet that really, not a drop. But, you know, they say, you know, psychic abilities is like dancing or drawing a picture. Some people are very good at it naturally. Other people, not so good. But you do some training and take some classes and you might become exceptional, or you might become a little bit better, but still not great, you know. But it's a skill set.
We are talking with Rita Louise here, radio personality.
From soulhealer.com.
And good, you got the plug in. Congratulations.
Thank
and
you.
And I should, in all deference to your education, say Dr. Rita Louise. You worked hard for that PhD, and you've made it work. I mean, you've written how many books?
4.
And you've had all kinds of things going on. What are you still working with the medical profession?
You mean doing alternative health work?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I have to pay my bills somehow.
Okay, well, tell people what you do there, and tell me a little bit about this alternative health care and what you do. You wrote a book about that especially, if I remember.
Avoiding the cosmic 2x4. But see, yeah. Jerry, you knew me before I was Dr. Rita. You just knew me when I was like Reverend Rita or Rita the Psychic Chick. You know, so.
Oh, well, I kept asking you for a deeply religious experience. So, yeah.
I love you, Jerry. Soulhealer.com. Anyway.
We've known each other a long time.
A long time. And so what I do in my private practice is I'm a naturopath and a medical intuitive. And a medical intuitive is a person who has a psychic ability that talks to you about health. And I am able to see inside people's bodies and tell them stuff that's wrong with them. What I find works best is, as opposed to someone scheduling a session, this could be in person or by phone or Skype, however, you know, as opposed to me, the person calling and saying, well, you're the psychic, you should tell me what's wrong with me. You know, people already know where their owies are. And so if you say, well, you know, there's something going on with my stomach and I don't really understand, or, you know, I have this kind of ache or pain, it just saves a lot of time and we can really dig into what's going on and explore, Is it a physical thing? Is it a functional thing? Is there a big emotional component tied to it? You know, what other factors are causing you to experience disease in your body? And then come up with a strategy to start addressing what's going on. So